Chapter 17.
Inside the club was masculine comfort. Hails of welcome from some prosperous-looking members and a friendly greeting from the man behind the bar. 2 pints, Fred, murmured Bennett absently, and the drinks appeared with amazing speed. My colleague poured his down apparently without swallowing and turned to me. Another, Jim? I had just tried a sip at mine and began to gulp anxiously at the bitter ale. Right, but let me get this one. No can do, laddie. He glanced at me with mild severity. Only members can buy drinks. Same again, Fred. I found I had 2 glasses at my elbow, and with a tremendous effort I got the first one down. Gasping slightly, I was surveying the second one timidly when I noticed that Bennett was 3/4 down his. As I watched, he drained it effortlessly.
You're slow, Jim, he said, smiling indulgently. Just set them up again, will you, Fred?
In some alarm, I watched the barman ply his handle and attack my second pint resolutely. I surprised myself by forcing it over my tonsils, then, breathing heavily, I got hold of the 3rd one just as Bennett spoke again.
We'll just have 1 for the road, Jim, he said pleasantly. Would you be so kind, Fred?
This was ridiculous, but I didn't want to appear a piker at our first meeting. With something akin to desperation, I raised the 3rd and began to suck feebly at it. When my glass was empty, I almost collapsed against the counter. My stomach was agonizingly distended, and a light perspiration had broken out on my brow. I almost lay there, and I saw my colleague moving across the carpet towards the door.
Time we were off, Jim, he said. Drink up!
It's wonderful what the human frame can tolerate when put to the test. I would have taken bets that it was impossible for me to drink that 4th pint without at least 30 minutes' rest, preferably in the prone position. But as Bennett's shoe tapped impatiently, I tipped the beer a little at a time into my mouth, feeling it wash round my back teeth before incredibly disappearing down my gullet. I believe the water torture was a favourite with the Spanish Inquisition, and as the pressure inside me increased, I knew just how their victims felt. When I at last blindly replaced my glass and splashed my way from the bar, the big man was holding the door open. Outside in the street, he placed an arm across my shoulder.
"The old spaniel won't be out of it yet," he said. "We'll just slip to my house and have a bite. I'm a little peckish."
Sunk in the deep upholstery of the Bentley, cradling my swollen abdomen in my arms, I watched the shop fronts flicker past the windows and give way to the darkness of the open countryside. We drew up outside a fine grey stone house in a typical Yorkshire village, and Bennett ushered me inside. He pushed me towards a leather armchair.
"Make yourself at home, laddie. Zoe's out at the moment, but I'll get some grub."
He bustled through to the kitchen and reappeared in seconds with a deep bowl which he placed on a table by my side.
"You know, Jim," he said, rubbing his hands, "there's nothing better after beer than a few pickled onions."
I cast a timorous glance into the bowl. Everything in this man's life seemed to be larger than life, even the onions. They were bigger than golf balls, brownish-white, glistening.
"Well, thanks, Mr. Bet... Granville."
I took one of them, held it between finger and thumb, and stared at it helplessly. The beer hadn't even begun to sort itself out inside me. The idea of starting on this potent-looking vegetable was unthinkable. Granville reached into the bowl, popped an onion into his mouth, crunched it quickly, swallowed it, and sank his teeth into a 2nd.
"By God, that's good. You know, my little wife's a marvellous cook. She even makes pickled onions better than anyone."
Munching happily, he moved over to the sideboard and clinked around for a few moments before placing in my hand a heavy-cut glass tumbler about 2/3 full of neat whiskey. I couldn't say anything because I'd taken the plunge and put the onion in my mouth, and as I bit boldly into it, the fumes rolled in a volatile wave into my nasal passages, making me sputter. I took a gulp at the whiskey and looked up at Granville with watering eyes. He was holding out the onion bowl again, and when I declined, he regarded it for a moment with hurt in his eyes.
"It's funny you don't like them. I always thought Zoe did them marvellously."
"Oh, you're wrong, Granville. Well, they're delicious. I just haven't finished this one."
He didn't reply, but continued to look at the bowl with gentle sorrow. I realized there was nothing else for it. I took another onion. Immensely gratified, Granville hurried through to the kitchen again.
This time, when he came back, he bore a tray with an enormous cold roast, a loaf of bread, butter, and mustard. "I think a beef sandwich would go down rather nicely, Jim," he murmured as he stropped his carving knife on a steel. Then he noticed my glass of whiskey still half full. "Come on, come on, come on," he said with some asperity. "You're not touching your drink." He watched me benevolently as I drained the glass, then he refilled it to its old level. "That's better. And have another onion."